Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 8, The Churning of the Milk Ocean, text number 39. Deva Swayam Bhagams Arhanti. Yetu ya yasa hetavaha. Satra yaga evai tasmin. Esha dharma sanatanaha. Deva, the demigods, swam bhagam, their own share, arhanti, deserve to take, yea, all of them who, tulya ayasa hetavaha, who made an equal endeavor, satra yage, in the performance of sacrifices, eva, similarly, etasmin, in this matter, esha, this, swan, dharma, religion, sanatanaha, eternal. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Some of the demons said, all the demigods have taken part in churning the ocean of milk. Now, as everyone has an equal right to partake in any public sacrifice, according to the eternal religious system, it is befitting that the demigods now have a share of this nectar. O King, in this way, the weaker demons forbade the stronger demons to take the nectar. Purport. Desiring to take the nectar, those among the demons who were less strong spoke in favor of the demigods. The weaker daityas naturally pleaded on behalf of the demigods to stop the stronger daityas, from drinking the nectar without sharing it. This way, disagreement and trouble arose as they forbade one another to drink the nectar. Typical diplomacy. So I'm going to keep on reading. The eighth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is more or less a story, mostly some purports, but Srila Prabhupada, but a lot of story. Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who can counteract any unfavorable situation, then assume the form of an extremely beautiful woman. This incarnation is a woman, Mohini Murti, was most pleasing to the mind. Her complexion resembled in color a newly grown blackish lotus, and every part of her body was beautifully situated. Her ears were equally decorated with earrings, her cheeks were very beautiful, her nose was raised, and her face full of youthful luster. Her large breasts made her waist seem very thin. Attracted by the aroma of her face and body, bumblebees hummed around her, and thus her eyes were restless. Her hair, which is extremely beautiful, was garlanded with Malika flowers. Her attractively constructed neck was decorated with a necklace and other ornaments. Her arms were decorated with bangles, her body was covered with a clean sari, and her breasts seemed like islands in an ocean of beauty. Her legs were decorated with ankle bells. Because of the movements of her eyebrows, as she smiled with shyness and glanced over the demons, all the demons were saturated with lusty desires, and everyone of them desired to possess her. Now it gets exciting, Bhagavata. This is what everyone's looking forward to. Purport. Because of the Supreme Lord's assuming the form of a beautiful woman to arouse the lusty desires of the demons, a description of her complete beauty is given here. Chapter 9 of the Bhagavatam, the Lord incarnates as Mohini Murti. This chapter describes how the demons, being enchanted by the beauty of the Mohini form, agreed to hand over the container of nectar to Mohini, Devi, who tactfully delivered it to the demigods. This is the chapter summary. When the demons got possession of the container of nectar, an extraordinarily beautiful young woman appeared before them. All the demons became captivated by the young woman's beauty and became attached to her. Now, because the demons were fighting amongst themselves, possessed the nectar, they selected this beautiful woman as a mediator to settle their quarrel. Taking advantage of the weakness in this regard, Mohini, the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, got the demons' promise that whatever decision she might give, they would not refuse to accept it. When the demons made this promise, the beautiful woman Mohini Murti had the demigods and demons sit in different lines so she could distribute the nectar. She knew the demons were quite unfit to drink the nectar. Therefore, by cheating them, she distributed all the nectar to the demigods. When the demons saw this cheating of Mohini Murti, they remained silent. But one demon named Rahu dressed himself like a demigod and sat down in the line of the demigods. He sat beside the sun and the moon. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead understood how Rahu was cheating, he immediately cut off the demon's head. Rahu, however, had already tasted the nectar, and therefore, although his head was severed, he remained alive. After the demigods finished drinking the nectar, the Supreme Personality of Godhead assumed his own form. Sukadeva Goswami ends this chapter by describing how powerful is the chanting of the holy names, pastimes, and paraphernalia of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, we'll keep on reading the whole chapter is all about, well, mostly it's about demons versus the demigods, the eternal pastime of demigods versus demons. And it goes on all over the universe. Sometimes there are hardly any demigods, and everyone is a demon. Therefore, fighting still goes on, but not fighting on religious principles. But this is all about fighting on religious principles that goes on eternally in this universe. It's not that somehow or another we're in a situation where there just happens to be demons and Krishna has created a few potential demigods who are trying to follow religious principles. But this is the eternal fight. This is what the whole universe is about. People think the universe is about the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees. But actually the whole universe is just about a fight between the demigods and the demons. And sometimes the demons win, and sometimes the demigods win. So we shouldn't think, well, because I'm a demigod, or trying to become a demigod, I'm automatically going to defeat the demons. I don't have to do anything. No, if the demigods act like demons, if they don't follow perfectly the religious principles, then they get defeated. And the demons, when they act like demigods, then they become victorious. Therefore, yatra yogeshvara krishna, yatra partha dhanardana, tatra shira vijayo bhutir, dhruva nitya matir mama. Yatra yogeshvara krishna, wherever there is Krishna, who is the master of all mystic power, and wherever there is Arjuna, who carries the bow Gandiva, there will certainly be opulence, victory, morality, and extraordinary power. When the demons follow Krishna's directions, even unconsciously, even without consciously doing it for Krishna, still they get some power. And similarly, when the demigods neglect to take shelter of Vishnu, then they're put into difficulty. But the demigods, generally, when they're in difficulty, they turn to Vishnu to help them, and then they're put back on the right path. So this is what will be explained in this eighth canto, so that by the time we get to the tenth canto, where we're supposed to be self-realized, then we should have already figured out that I'm not going to take shelter of the material world, I'm only going to take shelter of Krishna. And if we haven't come to that conclusion, we could always read the tenth canto, which we'll probably get into. It usually takes us a year to get through these cantos. But eventually we'll get to the tenth canto, and if we haven't understood that, then we won't be able to actually relish what's being described in the tenth canto, and we may even have different ideas of what it is. In any case, as much as one can actually take shelter of Krishna and give up the desire to control and enjoy the material world, of which Mohini Murti will become a personification of that, that we're here in the material world to imitate Radha and Krishna. Everyone wants to become Radha or Krishna, and therefore the material universe goes on because of the desire to do that. And if someone appears to be like Radha, then everyone who's aspiring to become Krishna automatically wants to possess her. And indeed that happens to the demons, but as we'll find out, we may think, well, they're demons, of course, but we'll find out that even these demons are better educated than we, most of us are. They're not just ordinary demons. They actually follow some principles. Nowadays, the demons don't follow any principle. The only principle they follow is that they don't follow any principles. That's a kind of principle. So let me keep on reading. Shukadeva Goswami said, thereafter the demons became inimical toward one another, throwing and snatching the container of nectar. Hope it didn't break. Imagine he had a container of nectar and everyone's grabbing for it. They gave up their friendly relationship. Meanwhile, they saw a very beautiful young woman coming forward toward them. So those who are demons, or those who have a tendency for demoniac, being demoniac, even on the slight pretense, there's a quarrel, there's disagreement. All over a material gain. If one thinks that one can get some material gain, one will fight even one's brother or sister or father or mother just for the benefit of material acquisition. And these demons, sons, they're all brothers or relatives because they're all sons of the same father and mother, that they're daityas. Still, they're going to fight with each other over the nectar. So this goes on eternally. Everyone's fighting with each other over the nectar. Nowadays, the nectar is money, money sweeter than honey. A professional thief, a professional soldier, a thief and a merchant will risk their very lives to get money, according to Prahlad Maharaj. So with money, we can get honey, if there's any available nowadays. They don't run out of it. Otherwise, the paper money they're handing out or the plastic money has no value. It's only the honey that we're actually trying to get from it. Upon seeing the beautiful woman, the demon said, alas, how wonderful is her beauty, how wonderful the luster of her body, and how wonderful the beauty of her youthful age. Speaking this way, they quickly approached her, full of lusty desires to enjoy her, and began to inquire from her in many ways. So this is diplomacy in the material world. If we don't glorify Krishna, then we have to glorify something else. Everyone's going to glorify something, and when one is interested in enjoying the material world, a beautiful young woman is the object of glorification for men, and a rich, aristocratic, handsome, educated, whatever man is the object of thought and glorification for a woman. Oh, wonderful, beautiful girl, is the demon speaking. You have such nice eyes, resembling the petals of a lotus flower. Who are you? Where do you come from? What is your purpose in coming here? To whom do you belong? O you whose thighs are extraordinarily beautiful, our minds are becoming agitated simply because of seeing you. Purport. The demons inquired how, from the wonderfully beautiful girl, to whom do you belong? A woman is supposed to belong to her father before her marriage, to her husband after her marriage, and to her grown-up sons in her old age. In regard to this inquiry, Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura says that the question, to whom do you belong, means whose daughter are you? Since the demons could understand that the beautiful girl was still unmarried, every one of them desired to marry her, and thus they inquired, whose daughter are you? At least the demons had that much of morality, which many demons nowadays don't have even that much morality. They didn't think, whose husband were you? Whose wife were you? No, they took it for granted that she was a daughter, because women in that culture, even amongst the demons, if they got married, then they didn't play around, we could say. And what to speak of a woman who was coming by herself, it was assumed that she was unmarried. That's what they're conjecturing or speculating. What to speak of human beings, even the demigods, demons, siddhas, Gandharvas, Charanas, and various directors of the universe, the Prajapatis, have never touched you before. I mean, this is really a speculation going on here. It is not that we are unable to understand your identity. Purport, even the Asuras observe the etiquette that no one should address a married woman with lust. The great analyst, Chandika Pandit says, Matri Vat Paradare Shu. One should consider another's wife to be one's mother. The Asuras, the demons, took it for granted that the beautiful young woman, Mohini Murti, would arrive before them, was certainly not married. Therefore, they assumed that no one in the world, including the demigods, the Gandharvas, and the Charanas, and the Siddhas, had ever touched her. The demons knew that the young girl was unmarried, and therefore they dared to address her. They supposed that the young girl, Mohini Murti, had come there to find a husband among all those present, the Daityas, the demigods, and the Gandharvas, and so on. O beautiful girl with beautiful eyebrows, certainly Providence, by His causeless mercy, has sent you to please the senses and minds of all of us. Is this not a fact? We are all now engaged in enmity amongst ourselves because this one subject matter, the container of nectar. Although we have been born in the same family, we have become increasingly inimical. O thin-waisted woman, you are so beautiful in your prestigious position. We therefore request you to favor us by settling our dispute. Purport, the demons understood that the beautiful woman had attracted the attention of all of them. Therefore, they unanimously requested her come the arbitrator to settle their dispute. So this is an example. When you become lusty, then you lose all your intelligence. That's if you have any intelligence to lose. And therefore, one cannot actually understand things properly. So here, the demons are about to kill each other to get the nectar, and just some woman walks by, and they hand it to her. This is the power of lust. Because in the material world, if we don't live for Krishna consciousness, the only reason why people exist in the material world is to gratify lust. There's no other reason anyone would want to be here. And therefore, anything that becomes attractive, any object, I guess she looked better than the jar of nectar or whatever it is. So they decided to take shelter of her rather than a jar of nectar. All of us, both demons and demigods, have been born of the same father, Kasyapa, and thus we are related as brothers. But now we are exhibiting our personal prowess in dissension. Therefore, we request you to settle our dispute and divide the nectar equally among us. I mean, they could have just done it themselves. They could have just decided to divide it up equally amongst themselves, but none of them could actually do it. That's the power of lust also. They knew that they should divide it up equally amongst themselves, but they were so lusty that as soon as they got their hands on it, they wanted it all for themselves. It's just like a baby. The baby's hands is out. If you put your finger on the baby's hands, immediately it closes and it won't let you go. I got it. I got it. I'm not going to let it go. So that's material world. As soon as you possess something, oh, it's mine. Before, you have no relationship to it, but as soon as it's in your hand, oh, it's mine, I can't let it go. That's the nature of the illusory energy. Having thus been requested by the, and the question is whether it has you or you have it. That power that makes you, forces you to hold on to something, actually that power has you. You're thinking you have something, but actually the power that's forcing you to hold on to something in the material world, the power of the illusory energy, has actually captivated us, the soul. And therefore we remain perpetually in the material existence. Having thus been requested by the demons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had assumed the form of a beautiful woman, began to smile. Looking at them in attractive feminine gestures, she spoke as follows. Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Mohini told the demons, O sons of Kasyapa Muni, I am only a prostitute. How is it that you have so much faith in me? A learned person never puts faith, his faith in a prostitute, in a woman. So notice, he's saying, Mohini Murti is saying, I guess she's a prostitute, but then she's looking at them with attractive feminine gestures to captivate them. So this is the how the material world works. Just like even in the spiritual world, Srimati Radharani captivates Krishna and plays as Lalita Devi and other gopis tell Radharani, never be submissive. Submissive women never get anywhere. Always be more or less hard to get, play hard to get. And that's what goes on eternally in the spiritual world. Radharani is always playing hard to get. I mean, usually is, not always, but usually is. And she's always the topmost gopi, while Chandravali, who's her sister, I guess sister, cousin or something, she's always submissive, and therefore she plays second to Srimati Radharani, who plays hard to get. So, Mohini Murti, being honest, at the same time being seducive, is expert for the material energy. After all, Krishna, he's created everything, so he knows exactly how to play every role expertly. Here's Chanaka Pandit again. Chanaka Pandit, the great politician and moral instructor, said, Vishvaso naiva kartavyam strishi raja kuleshucha. Never put your faith in a woman or a politician. We hear something all the devotees can argue about too. Thus the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is pretending to be a woman, warned the demons against putting so much faith in her. For she had appeared as an attractive woman ultimately to cheat them. Indirectly disclosing the purpose for which she had appeared before them. She said to the sons of Kasyapa, how is this? You're all born of a great rishi, yet you are putting your faith in a woman who is loitering here and there like a prostitute, unprotected by father or husband. Women in general should not be trusted, and what to speak of a woman loitering like a prostitute? The word kamini is significant in this connection. Women, especially beautiful young women, invoke the dormant, lusty desires of a man. Therefore, according to the Manu Samhita, every woman should be protected, either by her husband, her father, or by her grown sons. Without such protection, a woman will be exploited. Indeed, women like to be exploited by men. As soon as a woman is exploited by a man, she becomes a common prostitute. This is explained by Mohini Murti, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the devotees will argue over this. What are you talking about? You know, the women in our movement, they're all Lakshmi Devis, they're all under the spiritual energy. Which is, might be true when they are under the spiritual energy. Just like it may be true that the men are also devotees when they're under the spiritual energy. And when they're not, they're somewhere else. When they're not, they're playing the part of being under the external energy. And when they're playing the part of the external energy, there are so many contradictions in their activities. Then when lust takes over, whether for a man or a woman, then a whole sequence of activities take place, which leads to songs, poetry, art, music, so many, but it all boils down to just sense gratification. Now, why are women specifically told that they should be protected? I remember one time I was with Srila Prabhupada in Dallas, and the reporters were asking Prabhupada different questions. As a matter of fact, Prabhupada was trying to invoke controversy, apparently, in order to get our movement some publicity. So he went from there to Chicago and different places in America. And at that time, women's liberation was a topic. And so they were asking Prabhupada about what his opinion was. And he would always say women should be protected. And the main argument he gave, well, he gave different arguments. One of them is that women, they become pregnant, and when they're pregnant, they have to protect the child. Someone has to protect the child, and they need someone to help protect the child, because they can't protect the child by themselves. It's hard to keep a job and at the same time protect the child. So either they kill the child, or they beg, if they don't have a husband, either they kill the child, or they beg from the government. So there's a difference between a man and a woman that way. That the man, he can go away under the spell of the illusory energy. It's not that he cheats the material energy by going away. He actually gets implicated in sinful activity by doing it. And he'll have to pay his price in the future, either in this lifetime or in the future lifetime. But the woman has to decide, because the woman got exploited, and she's also responsible for allowing herself to be exploited, either karmically in previous lifetimes or in this lifetime by her decisions. And then she has a choice. Either she kills the child, aborts the child, gives it away, or she takes care of the child and begs from the government. In any case, it's all full of karmic reactions, whatever she does. And the worst, of course, is abandoning the child or killing it. So the whole thing is just replete with all kinds of sinful reactions for the man and the woman. If they don't act according to the laws of Krishna, they don't follow the Dharma. But the worst position is the woman, apparently, because she wasn't protected. Therefore, she has the most horrible choice of killing the child, allowing the child to be killed. If she takes that choice, then she really gets into trouble. Not that the man's not going to get into trouble also. Because the whole material world is just one big place of trouble. But as far as karma goes, the woman has the most difficult choice to make if she's not protected. And she got in that position because she wasn't protected. And why wasn't she protected? Either she doesn't know she's supposed to be protected, or she gives up protection. As the material nature is inducing people with lusty desires to perform sinful activities. But at the same time, the material nature and the modes of nature are also, by general, even amongst the demons, inducing people to give protection and to take protection. It's just a natural thing, how the material nature works, how the intelligence is being given. Just like the demons here in this pastime, the little demons didn't directly confront the big demons. because they would have gotten smashed. Therefore, they use diplomacy. Therefore, there's a natural feeling in those who are inferior to act in a certain way, and there's a natural feelings of those who are superior to act in a certain way. So society is supposed to encourage people to act according to those natural feelings. Like men are supposed to be naturally desirous of protecting women. And women should be naturally desirous of being protected by the proper man, someone who's actually going to protect them rather than exploit them. But when men lose the desire to protect women because they don't feel they're protectable, they don't want to be protected, you want to protect something you find valuable. And something is valuable in the material world. A woman is valuable in the material world if she's chaste, if she actually belongs to you. If the man gets this idea that the woman actually belongs to him, then he'll want to protect her. But if she's not chaste, and he doesn't really feel like she belongs to him, then he'll simply try to exploit her. And in that exploitation, there are so many karmic reactions going to happen, which are all undesirable. So modern society, beginning with the killing of animals, which is like the, especially killing the cow, means you're killing you're killing your mother. If you're killing your mother, you're going to kill anyone. And if you kill your father, you're going to kill anyone. And then, because of the lust that generates the sinful reactions and the mode of ignorance, therefore one will simply become impelled to take intoxication and gratify the senses, and then everything is a speculation, as the demons we see here are speculating. A woman walks in, she's beautiful, and they give her all kinds of, they just speculate, oh, you're not married, you're looking for a husband, here I am, I just happen to be loitering around here also. And then Mohini Murti tells the truth. I've come here just to bewilder here to cheat you. And they say, oh, that's so funny. Really? Yeah, please cheat us. We want to be cheated by you because you're so beautiful. So that's the material world. Somebody even says, I come here to exploit you. They say, yeah, right. You're exactly the person I want to exploit me. In other words, the material world is a place where everyone's crazy. And if people act crazy, we shouldn't think it's so unusual, because this is a place for crazy people. And crazy people act crazy. That they lose all common sense, what to speak of morality and all of the qualities, they lose even common sense, and therefore they find themselves victims in so many different ways and have to suffer. And we'll find out the only way is to get out of this, is to take shelter of Vishnu and not try and analyze all the different relationships in the material world, because the relationships, they're not, you can analyze them, the only conclusion is that they're just born out of lust. And born out of lust means there's no logic or reason to them, they're just born out of madness, ultimately. And then if there is logic and reason, it's because people refrain from gratifying their senses, they give up this idea of exploiting others, and then some real intelligence comes into mind, and then one can actually eventually become a human being and a devotee. Otherwise, trying to figure out what's going on in the material world on the basis of how lust is interacting, there is no way of figuring it out, except to understand that it's just madness. So I'll stop there on this happy note. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Yes, as you said, Maharaj, there's a lot of controversial points over here in this purport. And I was thinking, you know, this is, a woman is protected by the father, by the husband, by the sons, when they're performing their roles. Today, even if you have a father or a husband, if they are not performing their role, you're as good as not protected.
Well, they have, no one's trained.
Exactly.
But still there's a natural tendency to, there's a natural feeling. So if the woman wants to be protected by the father, unless he's completely a madman in the mode of ignorance, which is possible also in Kali Yuga, if they have any kind of training, you know, in religious principles, because there is some kind of religious principle still current within society, then the natural feeling of protection will be there. Hopefully. I mean, it's not always there because people have degraded themselves. It's not a given. But if there's something resembling civilized society, because even we find here the demons have some morality, some etiquette, some line that they draw.
And that was because of Vedic times, but today a father is supposed to arrange for his daughter to be married, but most parents, at least in the Western world, they'll make their own choice, they will choose their own partners, they will...
Of course, we're living in an animal society with some, but even the animals sometimes take care of their children, sometimes they take care of their husband or their wife, so even the animals, so we're living in an animal society. But that's what our movement is supposed to be for.
Right.
Establish culture.
Mm-hmm.
Without that culture, it simply will remain an animal society and degrade itself more and more so that even the animals won't take care of even their own children.
So our society...
Less than the animal. I should say less than an animal society.
Right. So really, we need to train our sons and daughters to take up responsibility and to fulfill their roles as husbands, as fathers, as mothers, as wives, nicely.
That's nice. Yeah, we should do that. We should train ourselves to become proper fathers and mothers, too.
Of course.
So we show them an example. For instance, in astrology, if you want to find out if a man or a woman are compatible for marriage, you look at their sun and the moon. I mean, in general, because the sun represents the father and the moon represents the mother. And if they're in good positions, they're strong, then you know that they had a good mother, father and mother, and therefore they're probably following that role model for their father and mother, are likely to be good father and mother too, or mother. So even if they're not, still we can be trained to become proper fathers and mothers.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's difficult because the emotional... Only by the chanting of the holy name can we actually purify our hearts from all these past samskaras or anarthas, so that we can actually, even if we weren't trained properly in our youth, in our childhood, by our fathers and mothers, still by the power of Krishna consciousness, we can become proper fathers and mothers, and therefore our children can learn how to become proper fathers and mothers too.
Jai. Thank you. Yes, Guru Maharaj. Thank you.
Anything else?
Thank you for inspiring lecture. You mentioned that sometimes when demons are acting like demigods and the demigods are acting like demons, the demons win. And I was just wondering, what is the essence which separates the demons from demigods? So how to evaluate who is demon, who is demigod, if it is not always based on their actions?
No, it is based on their actions. The demigods follow Krishna. When one is a demigod, one follows Krishna's instructions. And when one is a demon, they don't follow Krishna's instructions. They follow lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. That's what they follow. So that's the difference between a demigod and a demon. If a demigod doesn't follow Krishna's instructions, then he becomes like a demon. And when the demons, like Prahlad, follow Krishna's instructions, then they're a demigod. Okay.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. When you said that it's good they didn't break the pot, the demigods, I somehow got to wonder, how do they drink this pot for so long and they still are able to drink and it's not empty? How do they brew it again? Does Dhanvantari bring more? Do they... Or is it some self-replenishing pot?
I have no idea. I don't even know if I was there. I can't tell you at all. In any case, we just have to trust. If you find yourself in that position, you're last in line, you have to have some faith. Especially if you're a demigod. If you're a demon, your faith is useless. Anything else? All right, thank you very much. Grandaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.